Hi everyone, and thank you for coming to Lecture 3 of the Introduction to C++ course. Today we're going to talk about while loops, for loops, casting, and order of operations, which are all very important topics, especially loops, for understanding how C++ programs work. To start off, we're going to start off on slide 3. What is a loop? Well, a loop occurs when we want a single line or several lines of code to be executed several different times in order. So we execute it once, then we come to the top, execute it again, come to the top, execute it again. Now normally this would seem redundant, but what happens is that one variable may change every single loop. So the second time we go through the code, we might have incremented a counter variable or something like that. A counter variable would be a variable that counts which iteration through the loop we're in. So the first time we're through the loop, that's iteration number 0. So a counter variable might equal 0. The second time through the loop, the counter might equal 1. So this is an example of one thing that might change every time through the loop. We've already examined a simple loop, which is the while loop, which controls the program flow in our software. So the while loop is executed over and over and over, and every single frame it redraws the entire screen. And we can see that this is very apparent because we can look at the screen and this is redrawn every time. And we can see that within the while loop we might have changing variables, like in homework 2. If I press the arrow keys, then my line is going to move around the screen. And every time through the loop, I execute the same commands, but the variable values for the position of my line have changed, so my line moves around the screen. Loops are a very important part of programming because, for one thing, if I wanted to draw a line of pixels, then chances are I'd use a loop. Normally, if I want to draw a line from 0, 0 to 640, 0, then that would take 641 lines of code, one per pixel drawn. So if I use a loop, I can condense that to 4 lines of code, and that makes it a lot easier. Furthermore, I can also use generalization. So if I want to draw a line at anywhere on the screen that's 10 pixels wide, then I can use a loop with a combination of a variable to draw that line anywhere on the screen, just as we do in homework 2. Loops are very important in computing because not only, like in the last example, do we save time writing code, but we also save hard drive space. Instead of writing 641 lines of code, then we only write 4. We write a simple loop, and that saves a lot of space in our compiled program. And then finally, what if we want to draw a line, but we're not quite sure how long to draw the line when we compile our program? Well, one way of doing this is saying, I want a line of 5, or let's say the user inputs the line length during the program's run. Well, then we don't know how many pixels to draw on the screen beforehand, so we can't just write out every single line of code that draws 1 pixel per line. We're going to have to use a loop so that we can loop through this code a certain number of times, which is defined by the user. On slide 4, we're going to take a look at one of the simplest loops, the while loop. We're already familiar with the if command. And an if command will execute a certain branch of code if a condition is true. And the while loop is the same thing. While a condition is true, while the condition in parentheses is true, then execute the commands in the braces. This is exactly what an if loop or an if statement does, except that an if statement will only execute the statements in its braces once, while a while loop will continually go to the top and continually execute those statements. So, as I've said, we've already seen an example of the while loop in the graphics framework. We're going to render graphics while the escape key is not pressed, while that condition of the escape key not being pressed is true. So now we're going to go to slide 5. Here's a simple while loop example. We start off by allocating a variable called done, and done equals 1 in this case, and it's an integer. So we have the statement while not done, then execute the commands within the braces. So our question is, will the code inside the while loop ever be executed in this scenario? So we just said that while loops only execute the code within them if the statement in the parentheses is true. So let's take a look at done. If I just say while done, then is that statement true? Well, a true in C or C++ is defined to be 0. So done is equal to 1. So if we say while done, then that's false. I'm sorry, then that's true. True is non-zero. I think I messed up on the slide there. I did. True is non-zero. So since done equals 1, then if I say while done, then that executes to being true. So we will execute the commands. However, I put a not in front of done, and that negates the value to false. So the not sign reverses the value of the true or false that's sent to the while statement. So if I just add while done, then that's while 1 or while true. So that would execute the commands. However, because of the not sign, I'm going to reverse the true to false. And because it's false, the commands within the while statement will not be executed. So this is a clever way of doing a little game loop. We can have a variable saying done, and we're saying while this isn't done, we're going to execute these commands. Except we got our logic a little backward, unfortunately. Done should have initially been equal to 0, so that we would execute the commands. On slide 6, there's also a variation on the while loop called the do while loop. The do while loop is exactly the same as the while loop, except for one little thing. Notice on slide 5 that at the very top of the loop, we're doing the test. Is this statement within the parentheses true? If it is, we'll execute the commands. However, if we jump down to slide 7, then we're asking the same question. Will the code inside the do while loop ever be executed in this scenario? In a do while loop, the condition is only tested to loop to the top at the end of the code. So it automatically will execute all of the code within the braces. And only when it reaches the end of this code will it do a comparison and then loop back up to the top if the comparison is true. So done equals 1, so a while done would be true, and a while not done would thus be false. So we start off, go to the do line, and we execute all the commands in there. And then when we reach the bottom, we're going to assume that done hasn't been changed. And even if it has been changed, all the commands in between the do and while are still going to be executed. So the answer to our question is yes. So the question is on slide 8, when do we use a loop? When do we use a while loop? When do we use a do loop or a do while loop? Well, we should use a loop let's say while. We want to use a while loop when we only want to execute the loop commands if a certain condition is true. So we might want to execute a loop. So if a door is touched, then we'll want to continually set off the alarm. Whereas in the do while loop, let's say we're drawing a menu on the screen for a game. Well, of course we're going to want to draw the menu one time. And if the user selects something incorrect, then we're going to want to redraw the menu. So that's a good instance for a do while loop, because we want to remind the user, we want to tell him that he gave the incorrect answer, then erase the screen and start over again. So that might be a good selection for a do while loop. And if we have a loop situation, we're talking about whether we should use a while or a for loop here, unfortunately. So if we want to know which loop iteration we're in, if this is the 0th time, the first time, the second time, we probably shouldn't use a while loop. That's probably better situated for the for loop, especially if we're going to break out of the loop based on the time we've been traversing the loop for. So that's probably when you'll want to use these kinds of loops. On slide 9, we're going to get into the for loop, which is another type of loop. And again, all loops have in common, we're going to execute the same bunch of code several times, looping up to the top every time. So, we usually use a for loop if we want to execute the commands inside the loop a certain number of times. And usually we know what this certain number of times is, or we at least have a condition to break out. But usually if you have a condition that doesn't involve a counter variable, you're going to want to use a while loop. So the for loop is different because it has a counter, and this counter increments every loop iteration, so you can easily tell which iteration you're at and use that iteration in your calculations. Like if we're drawing a line, we're going to want to know whether this is the 0th iteration, the 5th iteration, so that we can determine where to draw these pixels on the screen, because we're going to want to start at the leftmost and then proceed to the rightmost, and that might be 10 pixels. So we're going to execute this code 10 times. And another benefit of the for loop is that you can initialize your counter variable at the beginning to 0 or to whatever value you want. This is all built-in features. So on slide 10, let's take a look at a simple for loop example. And let's compare it to the while loop, too. So first of all, if we look at the left code sample, I is initially initialized to 0. And it's actually done twice in this case. I is initialized twice. When we declare the variable I, we also define it to the value 1. And that's bad for our for loop, because we want to execute something 10 times. We want it to execute this code 10 times. And if I equals 1, then we're only going to execute it 9 times. So we're going to start off by setting our variable I equal to 0. That's the first part of the for loop. We say I equals 0. Our condition for the for loop is that I is less than 10. So while I is less than 10, we're going to execute the commands inside the for loop. And then finally, when we reach the end of the for loop, we're going to increment I by 1, which is the I++. Now, an really easy way to think about this is that the for loop on the left is exactly equivalent to the while loop on the right. Notice at the top, we still have that variable declaration of I. I often stands for index, by the way. We set the value of I to 0, and that's exactly what the for loop initially does. And then our condition is, while I is less than 10, we're going to execute a bunch of commands, exactly like in the for loop, and then at the very bottom, we're going to increment I by 1. And notice this is pretty much a cut and paste. I mean, the I++ in the for loop goes with the I++ at the bottom of the while loop. And in fact, I can put any commands I want to inside that for loop, and they'll just be inserted inside this while loop configuration. It's pretty neat. And that's pretty much how the for loop works. Just remember that you can decompose the for loop into a while loop at any time that you want to. So that's just a really neat feature of C++, because it lets you do all of this stuff on the right with just a single line of code. So now if we go to slide 11, let's take a look at an example of a for loop. This is kind of like the last one. And here we're going to draw a dotted line. It's going to be a dotted horizontal line. We're going to begin at certain coordinates called x position, comma y position. And in this case, x pos and y pos are where we want to start the line, the leftmost part of our line on the screen. And this line is going to be 10 pixels long horizontally, but it's going to be dotted, so only every other pixel will be lit. So to accomplish this, notice that at the top of our code, we declare the variable line pos. So this is our position along the line, current position along the line. And we just set equal to 1 to show that when we enter our for loop, we're going to set it equal to 0. So it really doesn't matter if we initialize the line position variable at the top, because it's immediately going to be initialized again when this for loop is executed. So our condition is, while the line position is less than 10, just like before, but in this case, we're going to increment the line position by 2 every round through the loop. So this effectively skips every other pixel. So here we're drawing a dotted line. So the first iteration through the loop, line pos equals 0. So if we look at the set pixel command, then we're going to set a pixel at x pos plus 0 is just x pos, comma y pos. So that's the beginning of our line, the leftmost position on our line. The second time through the loop, line pos equals line pos plus 2. So line position will equal 2. And so we'll set that pixel at x pos plus 2, comma y pos. And then the next time through the loop, x pos will equal 4, and then 6, and then 8, so we skip a pixel every time. And then it's going to equal 10, and when line pos equals 10, then we get up to the top of our for loop, at the top of the loop, and we're going to test, is line pos less than 10? And we're going to say this is false, so we're going to stop the looping and just continue on below the for loop. So we just drew a dotted line that's 10 pixels long. And remember again that it's 10 pixels because we're starting at a line pos equal to 0, and line pos is less than 10. So we're going from 0 to 9, and that's 10 pixels, because 1 through 9 is 9 pixels, and then 0 is an additional 10th pixel. So on slide 12, we're going to change our gears around a little, and talk about casting. Casting is very important to C and C++, because a lot of times we're working with different variable types. Take a look at the problem here. We're declaring two variables, MyScore and TotalScore. One of them is declared as a long, and the other is an unsigned long. Last lecture, we took a look at these two different variable types, and we determined they're stored in different ways. The long is a signed long, and the other is an unsigned long. And remember, the signed long uses the leftmost bit, the most significant bit, to determine the sign of the variable. So only the 0th through leftmost minus 1th bits are important in determining the actual number in a signed long. But the unsigned long uses a different convention for storing numbers. So it can store more positive numbers than the signed long can. But look here, we are assigning total score to my score. So the problem is that maybe we know that total score is going to fit in a signed long, definitely. But in this case, we can't make that assignment because it's possible that total score can't fit in my score. So the solution is that we can cast this variable. And when we cast something, we're just telling the compiler, yeah, I know I'm doing something that I probably shouldn't be doing and that this variable can be cut off. But I feel that that from what I know about the situation, this might not be true. So the solution is to cast the variable and to tell the compiler that we understand that we might lose some data here, but we're willing to take that risk. Some other consequences are if we convert between data types, which is what we do when we cast, we're going to convert between an unsigned long and a signed long, that this might take some time. And some conversions, for instance, between floating point variables and integer valued variables, takes a lot of time. So on slide 13, here's the solution. All you have to do is say, I want total score to be a long. And you put that in parentheses in front of total score. And that will convert total score from an unsigned long to a long at the possible loss of data, if total score happens to be too large to fit in my score. Slide 14. So casting is often necessary, and it's very difficult to get around not doing it. But you should attempt to not use casting, because it can result in the loss of data. And it's usually a very slow process, especially between floating point and integers. And so finally, on slide 15, just noting casting up there, we're going to take a look at the order of operations that C++ uses. So in a lot of math courses, the question is, when we just write a huge expression, which operators should we evaluate first? Should we do all the pluses and then the multiplies and then, you know, if we go from left to right in the expression? Well, here's a brief listing of what an order of operations is in slide 16. So first of all, as you learned in math class, anything in parentheses is evaluated first. So if you don't want problems with order of operations, put in a lot of parentheses. If you want to make sure that a certain thing is evaluated before something else, put it in parentheses. That's the surefire way to avoid problems of order of operations, because these problems are often very difficult to find, because it looks like everything's right to you. Secondly, we're going to evaluate some prefix and postfix, increment and decrement operators, because remember, if we do a put the plus plus in front of the variable, that's going to be incremented before the current statement is executed. If we put the plus plus to the right of the variable, it's going to be incremented after the statement is executed. So these are all obviously very important to do right after parentheses. Third, multiplications and divisions are evaluated from the left to the right, just like you learned in grade school, and then additions and subtractions are evaluated from the left to the right. So if I put 5 plus 6 times 3, then I'm not going to say 5 plus 6 is 8 times 3 is 24. That's not the right answer. So again, I did 5 plus 6 times 3, and the correct answer is that multiplication has a higher order of operation than addition. So I'm going to do the 6 times 3 is 18, and then I'm going to add that to 5, which is 23. Very important to remember. And then finally, the bit shifts we've learned from the last lesson are the last mathematical operators to be evaluated. They're very low priority in the order of our operations. So if we go to slide 17 and we look at that color formula that we derived, this isn't going to work correctly, because the division is evaluated first, just like we want, but the additions are evaluated before the bit shifts are, and we need those bit shifts to be evaluated before the additions. So if we look at the bottom sample of code, this is how you're going to have to do it. We're going to have to use parentheses around the bit shifts. So always use parentheses when you're not sure, and you'll avoid a lot of errors. Finally, slide 18. This is just a little to-do list. I hope you experiment a lot with the code. I hope that you are having fun with this. If you can't do the homework, please send us a question. It's just at itcc_teachers@pclx.com. And if you just can't get the homework done by Monday, please let us know, and we can help you out with that. Or if you're having problems understanding something or anything along those lines. Thanks a lot for your participation so far. It's been a blast doing this for you and putting it on the website, and I hope that this lecture recording is useful. Thanks again.